What I'm going to talk is about how to engineer, how to give shape to light for practical purposes. So this is everything that we have for light as a quantum resource. So we have momentum. We have angular momentum, polarization, that probably some people call spin angular momentum. That is, say, 90% of the applications nowadays of quantum information are made using polarization. We have orbital angular momentum, that is nothing more than the spatial shape of the light. That's something very similar to classical spatial shape. And then we have frequency. That is the topic of this talk. When I mean frequency, I mean bandwidth, I mean frequency correlations and entanglement. Entanglement and frequency correlations are closely related, although they are not exactly the same thing. Okay, so why to bother with frequency? So the first reason is because frequency is there anyway. And then if we want to use a portion of the full quantum state, for instance, polarization of the spatial shape, anyway, we have to be careful that this frequency is not going into the polarization, which is affecting polarization, because then we will degrade entanglement, for instance. So then we have to be careful to keep out frequency in any case. Some quantum applications that have appeared in the last few years live inherently in the frequency domain. So here are two examples. Optical coherence tomography is a well-known technique invented at the beginning of the 90s. Do imaging mainly of biological tissues. And a few years ago, a quantum counterpart was proposed, that this is quantum OCT, okay, by the group of professors Sale and Page at Boston University. This application needs frequency. We will see how. And then in 2001, there was a proposal for doing some positioning measurement algorithm that make use of correlated or anti-correlated photons to enhance the precision of the measurement. So if you use correlated photons, you can do it better than if you use two independent photons. And in this case, we also need frequency. But there is more. Frequency offers a multidimensional space, something similar to spatial entanglement. In fact, it's multidimensional in the sense that, at least in theory, it's infinite dimensional, but really it's not infinite dimensional. So there are several modes that are really important. For instance, you have here a case where you can have 7, 8 modes that you can control. This is an important point. And then you have an effective finite dimensional Hilbert space. Right? You can have it in frequency, or you can have it in a space. And finally, you want to use the light and the frequency properties of light for atom-photon interactions. And then in this case, you can have very specific properties that you have to fulfill. For instance, narrowband. You want to address a specific transition. So if you want to use some quantum light to address this interaction, you need that this is narrowband. But what is coming out for certain processes like spontaneous parametric down conversion is not precisely narrowband. So what you have to do to change that. You can explore also new state of quantum light and how to transfer this new quantum state of light to the atoms, or to see new types of effects of light on atoms. And then this can be applied, for instance, in coherent control. Okay, this is the basic geometry for us. We have a spontaneous parametric down conversion that up to this day is the most successful way of generating photons with quantum properties. This is a non-collinear geometry, and we will see that this is an important point here. We have the pump, we have a non-linear crystal that can be a few millimeters up to 2-3 centimeters. And then we have the photons, the signal photon and the Euler photon that are leaving the crystal in a certain angle. Well, see, this is the Windows to Mac translation, so sorry for that because it will appear more times now. Right? So these are the angles of emission for the signal and the angle for emission for the eye. In some cases, can be small, can be 2-3 degrees, but in other cases can be large, and we will see why we want large angles. So when I mean large angles can be from 10 degrees to 90 degrees, a transverse emitting configuration. Okay, so to summarize, we have light. We only consider frequency. So we have the signal frequency and the ILF frequency. And this mode function, or this biphoton function, is that we want to engineer. We have to take care also of the rest of the quantum state, for instance, momentum, in some way to tailor that. This mode function is that. We have here the ILF frequency in wavelength and the signal frequency. For instance, if we don't want entanglement, that this is the case sometimes, this will be. There are no correlations between signal and ILF. But perhaps we want highly correlated photons. This will be the case. So the question is, how we can go from here to here? Let's be a little more specific. So we are going to consider bandwidth. So sometimes we will want narrowband light, for instance, in communication, because we don't want the harmful effects of dispersion in fibers. Or maybe we want broadband light, for instance, in optical coherence tomography. If we want high resolution, we need high bandwidth. High bandwidth means several hundred nanometers. Spontaneous parametric down conversion normally has a large bandwidth, but we are talking about 20, 30, 40 nanometers. But we want more. We want 200, 300 nanometers. We are talking about frequency correlations. So essentially, we have a central frequency for the signal and for the ILF and some frequency deviation. So we can have anti-correlation. This should be omega. That is what we have normally when the pump beam is a continuous wave pump beam. But if we want anti-correlation but with a broadband pulse, sometimes we can want that. Correlations, we have the same frequency deviation, or even uncorrelations. And then we will consider entanglement or the lack of it. Because, for instance, if we want to generate heralded single photon with high degree of purity, one option is to generate a pair of photons, but they are not entangled. Because if they are entangled or correlated, and then we filter one, the other one will not be pure. But we want pure single photon. So one option is that. In this case, we don't want entanglement. So I will present three examples of several of the techniques that we are exploring and doing some experiments on that. So it's how to obtain enhanced bandwidth, many hundreds or several hundreds of nanometers. One technique that is called spatial to spectral mapping that has been developed in collaboration with Professor Bahasale in the Boston University. And then a new technique to control the frequency correlations of the photon. So how to obtain enhanced bandwidth? So one option is to use quasi-phase match. Quasi-phase matching is a very useful technique to control phase matching in crystals, essentially because of two reasons. First, because it allows phase matching in crystal where there's no other way to obtain phase matching. And second, it allows to use the largest nonlinear coefficient in a crystal. And this helps us to enhance the efficiency of the process. What is the point here? Normally, when you have a crystal like that, what you reverse is the sign of the nonlinearity. This is quasi-phase matching. You put a positive sign for the nonlinearity, and 50 microns later, negative, positive, negative, positive. This is something that was invented by Professor Blumberger in the 60s, so it's an old technique. Now, the point is that the period determines the frequency of the down-converted photons. So the point is, okay, if we change the period, you see that the period is changing, at each place in the crystal, you generate a new frequency. So playing with this period is what we call a chirp parameter, how much the period is changed. You can enhance the bandwidth to create photons with many different frequencies. And this is what we are doing here. We show here, this is the chirp parameter normalized. So you increase the period, for instance, for 20, 21, 22, 23 microns. This is something that can only be calculated. And here you have the bandwidth. And you see that when no chirp parameter, there's no chirp, so the period is constant, we can have, it depends on the configuration, but let's say 30, 40 nanometers. But when we have some chirp, see that we can arrive to several hundreds of nanometers. So for what? For what is useful this? For instance, imagine that we want to do some imaging, quantum imaging, using the advantages of using these quantum techniques. to do imaging of this membrane that have water, that is the main constituent of tissue, of biological tissue, and then you have 5 microns here. So what you need is a resolution that is better than that. So here you have the resolution, the axial resolution, as a function of the shear parameter. Here, with no shear parameter, we have some 40, 50 nanometers, and this is the resolution, 2 microns. But then, if you go here, you increase that, you have here less than 1 nanometer. So you can have submicron resolution. There's another advantage of that, right? This should be microwatts, is that if you increase, so all these techniques, if they have to compete or to be in the same playground, that classical technique like classical OCT, there is one drawback until now that is, okay, you have a few photons here. You want the quantum properties, but you want several billions of photons, but still keeping the quantum properties. If not, there's no play to compare with classical techniques. But this is useful here because, in fact, what is important is the flux rate that you generate divided by the bandwidth. So this should be small to keep quantum properties. So if the bandwidth is large, that is our case, you can increase the flux rate. There's a very nice discussion about that in Lawton's book, but very recently, Michel Berber's group in Israel, they did that. And they obtained something like 2-3 microwatts of down-converted power. And they were using some 40 nanometers. Now here we can have 400 nanometers, and we are trying to see in the experiment that, and then to have several hundred microwatts. That is a lot, that is not a lot, well, it depends. According to safety regulations, if you want to image retina, the retina, you don't have more than 600 microwatts. Okay, so if we can arrive with this technique to 100 microwatts, that's okay. We can compete, or at least compare, with classical techniques. The second concept is this spatial to spectral mapping. So the idea is to use the momentum conservation in spontaneous parametric down conversion to generate certain frequency properties. So we go from a space, so here what we control is the spatial shape of the pump. At the end, what we have is some frequency properties in this scheme. So here, there's one example. So we have the spectral width. This is just some theoretical calculations. The beam width, this is 10, 100, 1 millimeter. And you see that for collinear down conversion, there's no problem. So there's not the influence of the momentum into the frequency properties. But in non-collinear, you have. And then there are several samples for several configurations, type 1, type 0, type 2. We made some experiments with the people from Boston to measure both this bandwidth, and here you have the theoretical line, and these points are the experimental values. As a byproduct of this, we saw that if you only care about the frequency, the bandwidth of the single photons, I mean, you trace out the other photon, that you are losing some quantumness, then you can obtain very, very large values, more than 150. This is the theoretical line, and these are the experimental values. And this is something that we did to do some imaging. So we had a membrane that was 1.6 microns, and this is the refractive index, and this is how you do the imaging. You see here that due that we can use 185 nanometers, you are able to be to separate both membranes, that 1.56 microns. You can do another thing, that this is to generate controllable waveforms. We're doing some experiments about that now. So the idea is you have a Gaussian beam, you have this, but then you put here a vortex beam, so you have some spatial shape. This spatial shape is translated in the frequency spectrum. So then you generate controllable waveforms. And you have nearly complete freedom because you can put nearly everything here with a spatial light modulator and then to obtain what you want here. So finally, I would like to to present the FER technique that we are developing, that is a new technique to control frequency correlations. Sometimes quantum optics, it looks to me as classical nonlinear optics with some quantum flavor. And this is one example of that. So we want a technique to control the frequency correlation. So for us, this means to control the group velocity of all interacting waves. I mean, to control the group velocity of the pump, of the signal, of the island. So we want to go here, or here, or here. What is important, very important, is that we want this to be able to be done in any nonlinear crystal, in any frequency band. For instance, in last year, there was an experiment by one group in MIT, where they obtained frequency-correlated photons at this wavelength. Why at this wavelength? Because it's what allows you your crystal. But perhaps you are not interested in this wavelength. You are interested in another wavelength. So what to do? To look for a crystal, but perhaps this crystal do not exist. So then the importance of this technique is that allows you to do this in any nonlinear crystal in any frequency band. So this technique is a pulse front technique. This is angular dispersion. So essentially, we put the pump in a grating, and then we introduce angular dispersion. With that, what we achieve is a new group velocity. This angle depends on the angular dispersion. So you have to tilt your grating, and then a new group velocity dispersion. This is what is important for us, the new group velocity, because in this case, there's something missing here, but anyway, we have this other plot. Here is the tilt angle, so the amount of angular dispersion that you introduce, and the entropy of entanglement. And you see that you can obtain here no entanglement at all if you put the proper amount of dispersion. One way to measure that we have really frequency correlated or anti-correlated photons is to use this scheme. We have the pump beam, the grating, we introduce angular dispersion, we down convert, we remove the angular dispersion, and then we introduce this in a Hornung-Mandel interferometer. So let's focus in this case only. This is what we will obtain with nothing. So we are using a 4-nanometer pump beam. So this will be with anti-correlated photons and this with correlated photons. So very recently we performed some measurements and this is what we obtain. So this will be the case with no lucky today, okay. So this will be the Hornung-Mandel interferometer with no angular dispersion. We don't go to zero because we have 4 nanometers bandwidth. But then this is for anti-correlated photons, and this is for anti-correlated photons. So to conclude, what I have shown here is that we can obtain full control of the quantum state in frequency space. So this means we can generate, we control the bandwidth, can be narrow bandwidth, for communication, for instance, or can be largely enhanced, several hundreds of nanometers. We can control the frequency correlation. We can obtain correlated photons, anti-correlated photons with femtosecond pump beam, or pure single photons generated from pairs of photons uncorrelated. This is very important. It's tunable. Any nonlinear crystal, any frequency band of interest. And this opens new possibilities, for instance, to generate polarization entangled photons in this Paul Couillard configuration with the two cones that we are doing this experiment now. The generation of controllable waveforms that we are interested in, and new application like proof of principle of positioning measuring schemes, since we can generate photons with correlated or anti-correlated properties. Thank you.